Unit 1. Land, People, and Regions. The United States has different kinds of land, bodies of water, and climates. It has many valuable natural resources, too. The United States also has people who come from many countries around the world. Those people may have different beliefs and ways of doing things, and they live in different places. Yet all Americans are part of one nation. Unit Themes: Commonality and Diversity. Continuity and Change. Individualism and Interdependence. Unit Project: Give a group presentation. Complete this project as you study Unit 1. Suppose that you and some of your classmates have been asked to speak to a group of people who have come to the United States for the first time. You have been asked to tell them about the geography of the United States, its people, its government, or its different regions. As you read Unit 1, write down information that you would like to include in the presentation. You can use these notes when you plan the presentation. Set the scene with literature. This Land Is Your Land by Woody Guthrie. Woody Guthrie, 1912 to 1967, was an American singer and songwriter. He spent much of his life moving from place to place. Guthrie visited the back roads and towns and cities of the United States. He traveled from coast to coast, often hitching rides aboard slow-moving freight trains. Guthrie came to know the United States very well. Many of his songs tell about the people and land he saw along the way. One song, This Land Is Your Land, tells about the great beauty of the United States. Read now the words from that song. This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. As I was walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. I've roamed and rambled, and I've followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts. And all around me, a voice was sounding. This land was made for you and me. When the sun came shining, and I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving, and the dust clouds rolling, as the fog was lifting, a voice was chanting. This land was made for you and me. Chapter 1. The American Landscape. There is no part of the world where the names are so rich, poetical, humorous, and picturesque as the United States of America. All times, races, and languages have brought their contributions. Robert Louis Stevenson, 1879. Lesson 1. Focus. How are places different from one another? Main idea. As you read this lesson, compare and contrast the major landforms of the United States. Vocabulary: coastal plain, peninsula, plateau, basin, canyon, mountain range, fertile. A land of different lands. The writer, Robert Louis Stevenson, was very worried. He had just received word that his sweetheart, Fanny, was ill in America. Stevenson knew that he must go to be with Fanny. He did not know, however, that his trip would be a lesson in the geography of the United States. The Coastal Plain. On August 7, 1879, Stevenson left his home in Europe and boarded a waiting ship. The ship took 10 mostly stormy days to cross the Atlantic Ocean and reach New York City. As the ship neared the east coast of the United States, Stevenson looked out on a broad, tree-filled coastal plain. A coastal plain is low land that lies along an ocean. The land near New York City is part of a much larger region of low land called the coastal plain. The coastal plain begins along the coast of Massachusetts. At that point, it is only a narrow strip of land. The coastal plain gets wider as it goes on south toward the Florida Peninsula.
A peninsula is land almost entirely surrounded by water. From Florida, the coastal plain stretches west along the Gulf of Mexico into Texas and Mexico. The coast along the Atlantic Ocean and the Gulf of Mexico often has large bays. Offshore are many low, sandy islands. Review. What kind of land lies along the Atlantic and Gulf coasts of the United States? The Appalachian Mountains. Stevenson did not stay in New York City for long. Fanny lived on the Pacific coast of the United States, in San Francisco, California. To reach San Francisco, Stevenson climbed aboard a train and began the long journey west. Not long after the train passed through Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the land began to change. The coastal plain gave way to wide valleys and rolling hills. This area of high land on the eastern side of the Appalachian Mountains is called the Piedmont. Piedmont means foot of a mountain. The tree-covered Appalachian Mountains rise above the Piedmont. The Appalachians cover much of the eastern part of the United States. They stretch all the way from northern Alabama to southeastern Canada. Review. What mountains cover much of the eastern United States? The Interior Plains. To the west of the Appalachian Mountains, the land gets flat again. Here, in the center of the United States, Stevens saw other plains. They are called the Interior Plains. The word interior means inside. These huge plains stretch across the middle of the United States and north into Canada. Much of this land is very flat, but there are some hills. In a few places, like the Black Hills of South Dakota and the Ozark Plateau in Missouri and Arkansas, the land rises sharply. A plateau is high, mostly flat land. In the northeastern part of the interior plains are the five Great Lakes. The Great Lakes are the world's largest group of freshwater lakes. In fact, they could cover the whole United States with about 9 feet, 3 meters of water. During his long journey, Stevenson wrote about the land he saw. The country was flat, but far from being dull. All through Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, and Iowa, it was rich and various. The tall corn pleased the eye. The trees were graceful. By the time the train pulled into the station at Cozad in the middle of Nebraska, the interior plains had changed. Now the land had almost no trees and few rivers. The land seemed to look the same for mile after mile. Stevenson wrote that a person may walk 5 miles and see nothing, 10, and it is as though he had not moved, 20, and still he is in the midst of the same great level and has approached no nearer to the one object in view, the flat horizon. Review. What landform stretches across the middle of the United States? The Rocky Mountains. As Stevenson's train moved westward, the flat interior plains gave way to other mountains. For the first time, Stevenson saw the Rocky Mountains rising sharply toward the sky. They mark the western edge of the interior plains. The Rocky Mountains cover much of the western United States. They stretch north from New Mexico, through Canada, and into Alaska. Because the Rockies are so high, many of their peaks are covered with snow all year. Review. What landform marks the western edge of the interior plains? The land between the mountains. Stevenson's train took 2 days to cross the Rocky Mountains. Then the land changed once again. Now Stevenson looked out the window and saw only desolate and desert scenes, fiery hot and deadly weary. Between the Rocky Mountains on the east and other mountains farther west is a large area of land that is mostly dry. It is sometimes called the Intermountain region. Part of this land is the Great Basin, the largest desert in the United States. A basin is low, bowl-shaped land with higher ground all around it. Other large deserts lie south of the Great Basin, in Arizona and California. Not just basins, but other physical features mark this area. These include mountains and valleys, plateaus and canyons. A canyon is a deep, narrow valley with steep sides. The two largest plateaus here are the Columbia Plateau to the north and the Colorado Plateau to the southeast. Review. What kind of land is found west of the Rocky Mountains? More mountains and valleys. Stevenson's train left the desert land behind and headed toward more mountain ranges. A mountain range is a group of connected mountains. Lying just inside California is the Sierra Nevada. Sierra Nevada is Spanish for snowy mountain range. The land on the eastern side of the mountains is very steep. In places, it is so steep that passengers on Stevenson's train were pinned against their seats as the train climbed up the mountains. Other mountains lie north of the Sierra Nevada in Washington and Oregon. These are the Cascade Range. West of the Sierra Nevada and the Cascade Range are large valleys with fertile or rich land. The largest is California's Central Valley. Next to the Pacific Ocean are the Coast Ranges. These low mountains give much of the Pacific coast a rocky, rugged look. At many places, these mountains drop sharply into the Pacific Ocean. Unlike the Atlantic coast, the Pacific coast has very little flat land along it. 24 days after he had left his home in Europe, Stevenson arrived in San Francisco. There he met Fanny, who was well again. The two were married a short time later. Stevenson had traveled from one coast of the United States to the other, but he saw only a small part of the country. The United States is the fourth largest country in the world in size. Only Russia, Canada, and China are larger. Because the United States is so large, it has many places to see. That is one reason for this book, to help you get to know the United States of America. Review. Which three mountain ranges are nearest to the Pacific coast? Lesson 1 review. Check understanding. 1. Remember the facts. How does land along the Atlantic coast differ from land along the Pacific coast? 2. Recall the main idea. What major landforms are found in the United States? Think critically. 3. Think more about it. How might land affect the way of life in an area? 4. Link to you. Which of the landforms that Stevenson saw are most like the land where you live? Show what you know. Map activity. Use an outline map of the United States or draw one yourself. Then use a different color to show where each of the following areas is: the coastal plain, the Piedmont, the Appalachian Mountains, the interior plains, the Rocky Mountains, the Great Basin, the Sierra Nevada, the Cascade Range, and the Coast Ranges. Label each area and add a title and a key to your map. Share your map with family members. Lesson 2. Focus. How do rivers change the land? Main idea. Read to find out how rivers can both wear down and build up land. Vocabulary. Groundwater. Source. Channel. Mouth. Tributary. River system. Drainage basin. Erosion. Floodplain. Delta. Levee. Dam. Rivers change the land. In all parts of the United States, rivers cross the land, even in deserts. Some of these rivers are wide and deep. Others are narrow and shallow. Some rivers are always full of water, while others have just a little for much of the year. Yet all rivers change the land. Across the land. It is a dark day in Northern California. Clouds hide the sun and cover the tops of the nearby mountains. Large drops of rain begin to fall on the highway. Drivers start their windshield wipers and turn on their lights. It promises to be a real downpour. What happens to all the water? Some dries up. Some sinks into the soil to become groundwater, or the water beneath the earth's surface. The rest runs down the land surface and becomes part of the Sacramento River or some other river. The place where a river begins is its source. Like many rivers, the Sacramento begins high in the mountains. Not all rivers start in mountains, though. Some begin when lakes spill over. Others are formed by water pouring out of springs under the ground. No matter where or how they begin, all rivers flow from higher to lower ground. Along the way, each river carves a path or channel through the land. A channel is the deepest part of a river or other body of water. The bottom of a river is called the riverbed. The land along the sides is its banks. At the end of a river is its mouth. A river's mouth is the place where a river empties into some larger body of water. The larger body of water may be another river, a lake, or an ocean. Review. What are the three main parts of a river? Draining the land. As a river crosses the land, it may be joined by tributaries. A tributary is a stream or river that flows into a larger stream or river. Tributaries are also called branches. Together, a river and its tributaries make up a river system. The Ohio River, for example, is part of a huge river system. The two rivers, the Allegheny and the Monongahela, meet in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, to form the Ohio River. From there, the Ohio River flows almost 1,000 miles, 1,600 kilometers, southwest to Cairo, Illinois. Along its path, many tributaries join the Ohio. Among them are the Kentucky, Wabash, and Tennessee rivers. The Ohio River is itself a tributary of an even larger river system, the Mississippi River system. The mighty Mississippi's source is Lake Itasca in Minnesota. From there, the river flows 2,348 miles, 3,779 kilometers, south to the Gulf of Mexico. Some other major tributaries of the Mississippi are the Missouri, Illinois, Arkansas, and Red Rivers. All river systems drain or carry water away from the land around them. The land drained by a river system is its drainage basin. When a river is long, its drainage basin can be quite large. The Mississippi River system drains most of the land between the Rocky and the Appalachian Mountains. Sooner or later, water in most rivers reaches an ocean. This is not true of all rivers, however. In basins like the Great Basin, rivers flow into low-lying land. As you know, a basin is low, bowl-shaped land. If you pour water into a bowl, it just sits there. In a bowl, there is no place for the water to go. Land in the Great Basin has mountains all around it. The rivers that flow down from those mountains have no place to go. Some of the rivers flow into desert lands and dry up. Others flow into muddy pools that are not very deep, or into a lake. The largest of these lakes is the Great Salt Lake in Utah. Review. How are rivers in the Great Basin different from most other rivers in the United States? Geography. The Great Salt Lake. The water in rivers dissolves tiny amounts of salt found in the soil. Most rivers carry this salt to the ocean. The rivers that flow into the Great Salt Lake, however, deposit salt there. Over time, the water in the lake has become very salty. In fact, the Great Salt Lake is saltier than any ocean. It is so salty that no fish can live in its water. Wearing down the land. For millions of years, the Colorado River has been carving the walls of the Grand Canyon in northern Arizona. It was not until 1869, however, that anyone would try the 277-mile, 446-kilometer trip through the canyon. In that year, John Wesley Powell led a group of scientists down the Colorado River. Powell had decided that following the Colorado River through the Grand Canyon would add to the great sum of human knowledge. Powell strapped a chair to the deck of his boat and set off down the churning, swirling river. During the dangerous 3-month trip, he looked up at canyon walls so high that they threatened to block out the sun. To form the Grand Canyon, the Colorado River has slowly cut its way deeper and deeper through layers of rock. Parts of the canyon are now 1 mile, more than 1 kilometer deep, and 18 miles, 29 kilometers wide. Rivers have great power to shape the earth. In fact, the erosion caused by flowing water has formed many of the earth's physical features. Erosion is the wearing away of the earth's surface. As one scientist has noted, there is no force on this planet more powerful than water flowing over time. Flowing water acts to erode or wear down the Earth's surface. A river's current, or constantly moving water, sweeps rocks and sand down the river. It also carries soil that has been washed into the river by rain or melting snow. As the rocks, sand, and soil are bounced and tumbled by the current, they scrape along the bed of the river and its banks. This causes the river to carve an even deeper and wider path. Review. How does a river erode the land? Building up the land. Where there are mountains, the land is steep. Rivers flow swiftly. When a river reaches flat land, however, its current slows. The river begins to drop the sand and soil it has been carrying. Some may gather into sandbars or islands in a river. As sandbars grow, they can block a river and make it carve out a new path. A river also can add new soil to its floodplain. A floodplain is the low, flat land along a river. When a river floods, water spreads out over the floodplain. As the floodwaters flow back into the river's channel, they leave silt behind. Silt is fine sand and soil. It builds up each time the river floods, and it is good for farming. A river drops silt at its mouth, too. If there is no strong current to carry the silt away, it begins to build up. Over time, the silt can form a delta. A delta is the triangle-shaped land at a river's mouth. A delta also has rich soil. Review. How can rivers build up the land? Floods and people. At one time or another, most rivers flood. When people live and work on the floodplains, floods can do much more than just cover the ground with muddy water. They can destroy homes and crops and people's lives. People who chose to settle along the Mississippi River knew the dangers they faced. Yet people were sure they could overcome the dangers. In 1722, a French engineer decided that New Orleans, Louisiana, could be saved from the waters of the Mississippi by building a good dike, wall of earth, along the front of the city beside the river. Soon the Mississippi River had its first levee. A levee is a high wall made of earth. It is built along the banks of a river to control flooding. Over time, more levees were built along the Mississippi River system. Several dams were built, too. A dam is a wall built across a river to hold back water. A dam can protect against flooding by not letting too much water flow through a river at one time. Review. What have people done to control flooding on rivers? When rivers flood. People who live near rivers try to protect themselves and their property, but floods still take place. In the summer of 1993, for week after week, heavy rains fell across much of the interior plains. Water levels in the Mississippi River and in many of its tributaries began to rise. Up and down the Mississippi, people asked the same two questions over and over again. Were the levees high enough? Would the levees hold? People worked all day and all night, piling bags filled with sand onto the levees. They were afraid that the water would rise higher than the levees, or that the levees would break. Their worst fears came true. Many levees did not hold. The rivers spread out across the land. "It's as if another great lake has been added to the United States," said Vice President Al Gore. In all, some 8 million acres of land were flooded. Almost 70,000 people were forced from their homes. Review. Why did levees fail to protect some areas against flooding? Lesson 2 review. Check understanding. 1. Remember facts. Why is a river system's drainage basin sometimes very large? 2. Recall the main idea. How can rivers wear down and build up the land? Think critically. 3. Think more about it. Why do you think people sometimes choose to live on floodplains? Show what you know. Observation activity. Running water is always eroding the land. Look around you, at home, at school, and in your neighborhood. What examples of water erosion do you see? Describe each one. Map and globe skills. Use an elevation map. 1. Why learn this skill? Did you ever ride up a steep hill on a bike or up a mountain in a car? Then you know that the height of land can change from place to place. Sometimes you travel uphill as you go from one place to another. At other times, you travel downhill. But how high is the land at those places? What is the difference in height between them? To answer those questions, you need to use a map that shows elevation. Elevation is the height of the land. Land that is level with the surface of the ocean is said to be at sea level. The elevation of all land is measured from sea level, usually in feet or meters. The elevation of land at sea level is zero. Mount McKinley in Alaska is the highest mountain in the United States. Its elevation is 20,320 feet, 6,194 meters. In other words, the top of Mount McKinley is 20,320 feet, 6,194 meters, higher than sea level. 2. Understand the process. The elevation map of the United States on page 59 uses color to show relief or differences in elevation. It also uses shading to show relief. Shaded areas on the map help you see where hills and mountains are located, but they do not give you elevations. To find elevations, you must understand what each color stands for. The map key can help you do that. Find the map key. Notice that the map does not give exact elevations. Instead, each color represents a range of elevations. That is, each color stands for an area's highest and lowest elevations, and all of the elevations in between. 1. Find Miami, Florida on the map. The area around Miami is colored dark green. That tells you that the land near Miami is from 0 to 655 feet, 0 to 200 meters, above sea level. What is the elevation of the land east of Denver, Colorado? 2. What color shows elevations below sea level? Which state has two large areas with elevations below sea level? Besides helping you find the elevation of an area, an elevation map can help you discover which way a river flows. Rivers can flow from north to south, from west to east, or in any other direction, but they always flow from higher elevations to lower elevations. The source of a river is always at a higher elevation than its mouth is. 3. Find the source of the Mississippi River. What is the elevation of the land at the source of the Mississippi River? 4. Move your fingers south along the Mississippi River. Your finger is moving downstream or toward the river's mouth. What is the elevation of the land at the river's mouth? Now move your finger upstream or toward the river's source. 5. Find the source of the Rio Grande. Trace the river to its mouth. In which direction does the Rio Grande mainly flow? 3. Think and apply. Suppose that during your summer vacation, you wanted to canoe down the Missouri River. The source of the Missouri River is in the Rocky Mountains. Its mouth is at the Mississippi River near the city of St. Louis, Missouri. What is the elevation of the land around the Missouri River's source? What is the elevation of the land around the Missouri River's mouth? In which direction does the Missouri River mainly flow? Would it be better to start your trip at the river's source or at its mouth? Explain.